This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Yesterday afternoon, I spoke with Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. The Democrat had just gotten back to her office in the Capitol complex after a procedural vote on COVID relief, and we sat down for an interview over Zoom.
Hi, Brian?
Yes.
Perfect. Yes, hi. I have you here with the senator.
Ah, great. Hello, Senator. How are you?
Hi, Brian. I'm fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Can I just ask you for a sound check purposes? What did you have for lunch today?
It's Taco Tuesday at the nation's capital. So I had tacos.
Jealous. I am jealous. Okay. Well, listeners, because this interview was recorded ahead of time, we are not taking calls for this segment, but we do like to hear what you thought of our conversations. Email us at talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is my conversation with U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. Senator Duckworth, welcome back to the 21st. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's so good to be on. Thank you.
I want to return to early last month, January 6th, shortly after the insurrection, the riot. You told NPR you were in the Capitol complex when the breach occurred. We haven't had you on the show since then, so can I ask you to take us back there and share with our listeners where you were that day when the Capitol building was stormed, what you were feeling?
I was headed to the floor for a vote, so I was in the Capitol complex. I'd left my office and I was in the tunnels. So there are these tunnels underneath the Capitol that connect the office buildings to the Capitol themselves, and I had a speech to give at 2:50. And at 2:30, I was in the tunnels headed that way. The breach occurred at 2:15 when the insurrectionists actually broke through the Capitol. So I was on a collision course with the insurrectionists had I continued to travel along the tunnels and emerge up on the ground floor of the Capitol. And in fact, they breached the Capitol right next to my auxiliary office when I went into my auxiliary office later, which is where I was actually headed to prepare to go to the floor. It was the glass had been shattered. It was glass all over the floor. They had tried to do something to, as a battering ram, to try to batter through my door. But just before I got to the Capitol, the Capitol Police turned me around and said, "You need to go secure yourself in a secure location," which I did. And then I waited there for a few hours until they had gathered up all of the other senators and staff members. And then they went out to find the stragglers like me who were hunkered down in various locations by ourselves. And then they came and got me and brought me to the central secure location where they had everybody.
You know, you often use a wheelchair. I wonder if accessibility was an issue or a concern for you on that day in particular.
Accessibility is an issue for me every single day here at the Capitol, as it is for most wheelchair users. I will tell you that in this case, because of the accessibility issue, I ended up being safer because as I was headed to the floor, the Capitol Police said, "You can go to the floor. You might make it there just before the these guys have breached. But then we'll be evacuating from the floor. You get to evacuate with the rest of the senators." And I chose not to go because there's only one way on and off the floor for a wheelchair user. And I knew that it would have made me much more difficult to evacuate if I were to put myself in that situation. So I chose to not proceed forward. And it ended up being the right decision because I knew the Capitol Police were going to have their hands full with the other senators, let alone one who is a wheelchair user. And then that ended up being the right decision. But yes, like most people who use wheelchairs, I am constantly considering and trying to figure out, you know, my path forward on a daily basis and whether this is going to be accessible or not. And I knew that day that I was going to be more work for the Capitol Police had I moved on forward. So that's why I stopped progressing towards the Capitol when I did.
It's been widely reported that many of the people who were part of this riot or insurrection have military ties. Either they were current military members or they were veterans. CNN found 14% of the first 150 people who are facing charges were either current or former members of the military. The Peoria Journal-Star has reported that an Illinois man, Donovan Crowell, is a former Marine. He's facing charges for conspiracy and destruction of government property, among other things. As a combat veteran of the Iraq War, you were a helicopter pilot. Are you concerned about what appears to be the overrepresentation of military people in this insurrection?
Very much so. I was deeply troubled by reports that service members and military retirees possibly engaged at greater numbers than the average population in the insurrection on January 6th. You know, these are folks who swore the same oath I did to protect and defend the Constitution, and yet They were there to stop me from carrying out my oath to protect and defend the Constitution, to execute the electoral count. And so it broke my heart and made me very angry and frustrated on that day itself to see people carrying the stars and stripes as they stormed the Capitol to try to overthrow our government, the very same flag I wore on my uniform in combat. You know, and I think that if criminal investigators determine that these reports are true, then the DOD has to take appropriate action to hold these individuals accountable under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And then we have to work with the DOD to uphold good order and discipline, which means that we have to root out extremists that infiltrate the military and threaten our national security.
Well, and that's the question, right? Because this, it seems that maybe this is a broader issue than just the individuals who turned up in Washington. Are you concerned about white nationalist elements in the military generally? How big a concern is this?
It's a significant concern for me. I've actually already spoken with Secretary Austin about this during his confirmation process. I've also written a letter to him asking him to look into and do an investigation into the extent of extremist views within the military and what we can do to counter it. And he's agreed that this is an issue. You know, he, during his conversations with me, we discussed how we had a similar thing happen back almost 10 years ago now at the 82nd Airborne Division in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, where there turned out to be a group of white nationalists and racists who had managed to infiltrate the 82nd Airborne. And it took quite a bit for the Army to address that and remedy the situation. And it seems like the same thing is now happening, but now it seems to be DOD-wide, not just within the Army. And so we need to stop this, because in order for the military to truly protect and defend American people, it cannot be a place that harbors racists and extremists.
This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. Next week, the Senate begins a second impeachment trial of now former President Trump. I wonder, what is your case for impeachment, and particularly when Republicans in the Senate, or at least 45 of them, are saying impeachment is unconstitutional, former President Trump is unlikely to be convicted? Is this worth pursuing?
Well, I think that we do need to pursue it, but we need to do it in a way that we also continue to work for the American people. That is, I want to make sure we get a COVID rescue package out the door, an additional $1,400 payment to working families, money to states and local governments, so that we can do things like put some more money towards our schools to get our kids back in schools, and more money to help small businesses. That said, I do think that we need to move forward. I mean, setting aside the fact that in the entire history of this country, the only officials who have ever been barred from serving in office through impeachment have all been former officials. It is constitutional. You know, our nation was built on the principle of equal justice for all, and the idea that no one person is above the law. So we can't not do something about this, because then we'll be sending a message to future office holders, whether it's in the Senate or the President of the United States or your local mayor, that, hey, you know what? Go ahead and break the law. Go ahead and do whatever you want in the last days and last weeks of your term, because we're not gonna hold you accountable once you leave office. That's wrong. Just because someone is a former president of the United States doesn't mean that they are above the law. The Senate will try Donald Trump for inciting a violent insurrection on live TV precisely because it is the only way to protect those ideals. But I will tell you that while I do that, I'm also going to be pressuring our leadership to make sure that we continue to move forward legislation that will help the American people and will fight the pandemic at the same time.
Last thing I want to ask about this are your Senate colleagues, eight of them, who even after the riot voted to reject the results of the election. I've seen calls for censure, even expulsion, or on the other end of the spectrum, maybe just sort of informally ostracizing and isolating the members. I wonder what you think about that. How do you go forward with those senators?
Well, I think some of the senators, like Senator Hawley from Missouri, who actively encouraged insurrectionists even before they had stormed the Capitol and continued to support them afterwards, should be held accountable. And I think the Senate will, you know, we've asked for a review of their actions, and that is going to be ongoing. And we'll see. I want to let that process move forward. No senator should be above the law, just as no president, no one is above the law in this country, and right matters here.
The other big thing that the Senate is considering right now, as you mentioned earlier, and I should say we are taping this on Tuesday afternoon in order to make our schedules work, so things may, developments are moving fast, but COVID relief is a big issue right now. President Biden has a $1.9 trillion package he has asked for. What are your thoughts on President Biden's COVID package and the one that some of your colleagues are counter-proposing?
Well, I happen to agree with President Biden that the Republican proposal is nowhere near enough. It's not going to get our kids back in schools because it's not going to have enough money to go to local states and local governments in order to provide the resources in education for all of those school districts so our kids can get back into the classroom. I support having a cap on, you know, the maximum amount of money a particular family can be making before they stop receiving the payment, but the level that the Republicans are suggesting is far too low. I also think that we need to extend unemployment benefits. There's just so much we need to do in order to save our economy. We had a conversation with Janet Yellen today, and she said, we must pass this Biden COVID relief package because if we don't do that, we are going to be in a recession for a prolonged period of time, and our economy desperately needs us so that we can get small businesses back to work, get people back to their jobs, to get the economy moving again, to get our kids back in school. And if we don't do that, we will be in for a very prolonged period of economic pain that our country simply does not need to go through if we would just only pass the Biden package.
You've also talked about changing the state and local tax deduction that was eliminated as part of the big tax cut package a few years ago. Is there a realistic chance? A lot of Illinoisans were affected by that in terms of how much of their state and local taxes they could deduct off their federal tax returns.
Well, I mean, I think that there's an opportunity here, and I think we need to push it forward. Look, the Republican-Trump tax scam from a few years ago was essentially a huge giveaway to large corporations and the wealthy and the well-connected. You know, all the while, families in Illinois were forced to pick up the tab because they were forced to be taxed twice by getting rid of the state and local tax credit. I think capping the state and local tax deduction to $10,000, it led to millions of Americans and many in Illinois being double taxed on their hard-earned income. And I think it's far past time to reverse this policy. By eliminating this cap, we not only help our working families, but those SALT deductions support local municipalities. You know, most local municipalities are looking at are looking to raise their property taxes because of the lost revenue, that SALT revenue that they lost. They need this money to fund proper critical investments in public education, infrastructure, social services, public safety, again, getting our kids back in schools. And that's why we need to restore the state and local tax deductions so that our state and local governments can actually afford to do the things they need to do to keep us safe in our hometowns and keep our kids in schools and allow commerce and the economy to continue to grow. And they can't do that if we keep giving this tax cut to the rich and to the ultra wealthy and to corporations like General Electric who don't even pay taxes. It's ridiculous that we're putting corporations above working families in the middle class.
Just a couple of minutes left in our conversation. I want to shift topics one more time. You've also talked in recent days about bringing home Illinoisan Mark Frericks. He is being held hostage by the Taliban. We've just passed the 1-year anniversary of his abduction. Can you just briefly tell us about Mark and what you're calling on the Biden administration to do?
Mark is a Navy veteran who, after his military service, went back to serve in Iraq and Afghanistan as a contractor. This is a practice that the Department of Defense has been engaging in ever since the start of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan that I have been following quite critically, because what it does is it inflates the number of people who are downrange, acting like the military, but they're not military. And because they're not military and they're contractors, they're not protected the way our military men and women are. So you're taking these Americans, sending them back there to serve as Department of Defense contractors, doing things like security details and things that soldiers and Marines would do, but without the protection of being in uniform. And it makes them vulnerable so that when they get captured the way Mr. Frericks was, they're out there alone on their own. And we have hostages, Americans who are being held by the Taliban right now, that the Trump administration just simply forgot and ignored. I have asked the Biden administration that in any more negotiations they have with the Taliban, that the return of American hostages, Mr. Frericks being one of them, must be on the table, must be a condition of anything that we negotiate with them. And I am scheduled actually tomorrow to receive a briefing from the American ambassador on this on hostage issue to let me know where exactly we stand and when is the last time that we've got a proper update on Mr. Farouk's well-being. I don't know if he's sick. I don't know if he's wounded. I don't know if he's in failing health. I don't know if he has COVID-19. I need to know where he is. And so I'm putting a lot of pressure on the Biden administration to give me a briefing. I would like for them to give it to the family members. If they won't, I've got the security clearances. They can certainly give them to me and see where he is, and making sure that his release, as well as the release of other American hostages, are part of any type of negotiations that we're engaging in right now with the Taliban.
The last thing I want to ask you, this is more of a big picture question. I'm posing it to elected officials of both parties throughout this year. And that is, what in your view is politics for? What is the purpose of politics?
I think the purpose of politics is for us to serve the American people. I mean, that's my job. And that's the best part of my job, is getting to serve my constituency. And so I engage in politics. I engage in negotiations with my colleagues on the other side of the aisle. I engage in writing legislation, trying to build coalitions, all to make the lives of the people that I represent in Illinois and the larger American population better. It's my job to serve the people of Illinois. It's something I've done my entire adult life in the military. And I'm so privileged to hold the seat that I hold. And that's why I think it's always important to keep front and center, regardless of everything else that goes on in partisan politics, that our point of being here is to be the servant of the American people, and their well-being needs to be placed first.
Senator Tammy Duckworth is the junior United States Senator from Illinois. Senator Duckworth, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me on.
This is The 21st. More to come. Stay with us.